It's very special for me to be here in Toronto and to speak here on this special day of learning, because I used to live here many, many years ago as a child. From the age of 3 to 7, I came to Toronto with my family. And my father used to teach here in Toronto, in Or Chaim, in Ol Pana. And since last night, I spoke a bit last night in Or Chaim, and this morning, and now, every so often people are walking over to me, and they mention to me how they remember my father, and they ask me how he's doing, and they remember what he taught them. And it's a long time ago, it's over 40 years ago. And due to the fact that he's not very well, it's very emotional for me to be here and to speak to people that some of them that know him, that learned by him. And I'm going to share with you thoughts of my father, ideas that I heard from him. I don't have any chidushim, just ideas that my father heard from Rabbi Soloveitchik, and he passed over to myself and to others. Ideas that many times today one can find in many books. Many of the books that we have of Rav Soloveitchik's Torah today have these ideas in them. My father obviously heard them from the Rav himself, and these are parts of ideas with Tisha B'Av that I've heard also from my father. When we look at Tisha B'Av and we ask ourselves, what kind of day is Tisha B'Av? What is the family that Tisha B'Av is part of? We have Chagim, we have Moadim, we have Taniyot. So at first glance, one would argue that Tisha B'Av is a Ta'anit, is a day, is a fast. We have a section of fast days. It starts from Asara B'Tevet, it goes into Shivasar B'Tammuz, it goes into Tisha B'Av and ends in Tzom Gedaliah. The Navi Zecharia brings all these days together, Tzom HaRevi'i, HaChamishi, HaShvi'i, HaSvi'i. He brings them all together in one group. And what they all have in common, of course, is A, they are days of fasting. We fast these days. But more than that, we fast in these days because of Churban Beit HaMikdash. All these events, all these days, are chronologically in the order of the events that took place that led ultimately to Churban Beit HaMikdash. So, at first glance, Tisha B'Av is part of the fast days. But we all know that it's not so simple. And why is that? Because, as we can feel already with our stomachs, we have been fasting for way more than we usually fast on fast days. This fast day is a 24-hour fast day. Okay, so you can argue that Tisha B'Av is more chamur, is more severe than other fast days, and that's why we fast a bit longer. And truthfully, one might argue that we should have fasted on Asara B'Tevet and Shiva Asar B'Tammuz and Tzom Gedaliah also 24 hours, because according to Jewish law, the day begins with the night. And according to some poskim, that might be actually true regarding other issues to do with the night before a fast day, whether or not we consider the night of a fast day as a fast day or not, for weddings, etc. But we were lenient about other fast days because it's very hard to fast. But Tisha B'Av, the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, we fast 24 hours. Okay, but that's not true. Why? Because we all know that on Tisha B'Av, we have customs that we do not apply in regular fast days. We have special minhagim and halachot that only apply to Tisha B'Av, and they don't apply in Asara B'Tevet. People sometimes get confused, but there's no problem to shower on other fast days. There is no problem, as we all know, to wear shoes on the regular fast days. On Tisha B'Av, we have special customs of avilut, inuim, afflictions. Where do they come from? So some might argue that they are also part of the Ta'aniyot. What is the Ta'anit of all Ta'aniyot, the mother of all Ta'aniyot? Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur also we have these afflictions, inuim. We don't wear leather shoes, we don't bathe. So maybe Tisha B'Av is still in the family of the Ta'aniyot, and it's part of Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is also a Ta'anit, or the Ta'anit, and because of the severity of the day, We follow the customs of Yom Kippur. But that wouldn't be good enough either. Because, as I mentioned before, on Tisha B'Av, we have customs of mourning which do not exist on Yom Kippur. The Isur to learn Torah obviously does not exist on Yom Kippur. The minhag of sitting on the floor does not exist in Yom Kippur. And the truth is that the Gemara tells us that all these customs, nilata sandal, not wearing leather shoes, and showering, have to do with avilut. The Gemara tells us that these customs have to do with avilut, mourning. When I say mourning, we all know that there is another family of laws in the Torah, the family of laws that have to do with mourning, with avilut. If chas v'shalom, we lose a parent, if we lose a relative, we sit shiva, we mourn. And the Gemara seems to indicate that Tisha B'Av is a yom avilut, is a yom of mourning, and not necessarily a yom ta'anit. So you're looking at me and you're telling me, what does it make a difference? Is it yom ta'anit? Is it yom avilut? So I would like to argue and discuss what makes the avilut of today special and unique and different. And that in Judaism, when we pick our customs, we don't just, you know, make things as they go along, but rather we have models, models of halakha of which we take and implement them in the day and turn the day into the day of avilut based upon halachot that exist already in the system. And I'll explain what I mean. Let's go through some of the halachot that are kept today. We're not allowed to bathe. We're not allowed to come in contact with water today. Isur rechitza. The Gemara tells us that the isur rechitza begins already at the Seudah Mafseket. Already before Tisha B'Av begins, the Gemara says that one should not wash themselves at that point. Now that's very strange. Because let's go back to what I said before. If the source of Isur Rechitza, of the prohibition to bathe yourself, is derived from Ta'aniyot, from a fast day, well, at Seudah Mafseket, the meal before the fast, it's not a fast day yet. So surely, it is not connected to Ta'anit. And if you argue that the Isur of Rechitza, the prohibition to bathe yourself, stems from the laws of Avilut, well, it doesn't make sense either, because we know that an avel, someone who's in mourning, is allowed to wash himself with cold water. And yet, on Tisha B'Av, the Gemara explicitly tells us that no water whatsoever can be put on your body. No hot, no cold, nothing. It seems that the Isur of Rechitza on Tisha B'Av doesn't stem from Ta'anit and doesn't stem from avel. So where is it from? What is the source of this prohibition to bathe yourself? So the Griz of Velva, the Brisker Rav really proved from here that Tisha B'Av has both elements in it. It has an element of Yom Ta'anit, a day of fast, and it also has a day of Avilut. Classic Brisker Torah, when you have a contradiction, you explain why there are two ideas going on at the same time. Telling us that on Yom Tisha B'Av, there is an Isur Rechitza that stems from a Yom Ta'anit, and there's an Isur Rechitza that stems from the Avilut. And I'll explain. We said before, Avilut, the Isur of bathing yourself from Avilut would permit you, would allow you to come in contact with cold water. That Isur begins before the fast begins. When? At the Seudah Mafseket. When Tisha B'Av starts, the Isur Rechitza stems from the fact that it's a Yom Ta'anit. At Seudah Mafseket, before Tisha B'Av, the Avilut has begun. The Seudah itself, explained Rav Soloveitchik, is a way of Avilut. It's not just a meal preparing ourselves for Tisha B'Av, but rather it is a symbol of the morning as we are about to enter Tisha B'Av. The morning begins then. And how do we prove it? Very simple. We all know the halakha is is that you have to sit on the floor when you eat your last meal before Tisha B'Av. The halacha is that we don't gather as a family. We don't sit as a group of people together. We don't do a zimun. We don't bench together. We sit on the floor eating our food, our egg. Everyone has their own custom that symbolizes the mourner's type of food, because we are now in mourning. And therefore, the Gemara argues that at that point, you can't bathe yourself already, because Isurei Avilut have begun then. On Tisha B'Av, Isurei Rechitza, the prohibitions of bathing yourself, start because it's a ta'anit. Now, if what I just said is true, then one could argue that you would be able to bathe your hands with cold water right before Tisha B'Av, but I'm not going to that discussion right now. What I wanted to show is that in the structure of halakha that tells us how we must behave, how we must act, our customs are not just the way we feel about things. They didn't just develop because of certain culture and folklore customs as the time went by, but rather many of the customs, not all of them, really go back to a halachic rationale of how a person is supposed to live his life when he comes to mourning. And I'll continue and explain what I mean. Let's talk a little bit about other Isurim that come up on Tisha B'Av. Let's talk about Limud Torah, learning Torah. Where does this Isur come from? You know, they say there's a lot of different stories and jokes about rabbis when it came to the Isur of learning Torah. They say the Rogachover, the Tfanat Paneach, Rabbi Yosef Miruzhin, one of the great giants of Europe in the early 20th century, late 19th century, who all day learned Torah. And they used to see him on Tisha B'Av sitting and learning Torah. And his Talmidim, or I don't know if he had Talmidim exactly, but his people asked him, how come you're learning Torah? You're not supposed to. So there are two different stories of what he answered. One answer was, he said, I'm trying to stop, I just can't. It's just who I am. I'm really, it's not my fault. And the other answer they say he gave was, I want to see them punish me for this one. Learning Torah on Tisha B'Av. How bad can it really be to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av? They say that Rav Lichtenstein, there's a story about Rav Lichtenstein, I heard it from different people, how when he broke his fast in the yeshiva and guys went down to eat supper, they waited for him, and they noticed that he was learning Gemara because he explained that he had to break his fast of learning before he goes to eat and break his fast by eating. It's a very strange idea that there's one day a year that we do not learn Torah. It's so against who we are and what we believe in. Why? Why can't we learn Torah? Third, and where does it stem from? So the obvious source of this Isur would be Avel. I said before, Tisha B'Av, we learn the laws of Tisha B'Av from the laws of Avilut. They're not made up. We have Ilchot Avilut. We know what happens when someone loses a parent. He has to mourn. There are certain customs that you have to take upon yourself, and that's what we do on Tisha B'Av. So, let's go back to Ilchot Avilut and see what is the halakha regarding Limud Torah. So it's very interesting. It says very clearly that when someone sits Shiva for a parent, one cannot learn Torah. Nothing. There's no ifs, no buts. Nothing can be learned. No Torah. Why? So there are different explanations to this. One explanation is that Torah is simcha, v'samach levav enosh. Now, the truth is that it's not so simple, right? Because how many of us really feel that joy when you learn a daf of Gemara, that you feel that it's really disturbing your avelut? I think not many people can really live up to that. It could very well be that it's not about your feelings, but rather the idea that Torah symbolizes simcha, and no matter how we feel. Another way of looking at it is to understand that Torah is part of our routine. 24/7 we learn Torah. Tisha B'Av or an avel is someone who stops life. Life has stopped for a few days. And the way we commemorate that is by not learning Torah. Nevertheless, it says very clearly that an avel cannot learn Torah. When my father sat Shiva for his parents, he followed Rabbi Soloveitchik's custom, which was to not learn a thing. He did not allow any Mishnayot in the house. I know that many people have the custom of learning Mishnayot between Mincha and Maariv. It's an old Jewish custom. And my father was very strict about this. The Gemara says, no learning is no learning, nothing. And yet, on Tisha B'Av, the Gemara says that you're allowed to learn. You're allowed to learn Eicha, Yirmiyahu, the Kinot. I mean, hey, what am I doing right now? The Gemara tells us that we're allowed to learn certain parts of the Torah which make us sad. Is an avel allowed to do that? Can an avel learn those parts of the Torah? So the Tosfot discusses this question in Moed Katan, and Tosfot mentions that one of the Balei HaTosafot, when he was younger, really argued that you're not allowed to, and that there's a difference between an avel and Tisha B'Av. And then it says that when he got older, he changed his mind, which is an interesting observation. What happened when he got older? I think there's one can argue and discuss why that happened, but the fact remains that there is a distinction between the learning Torah of Tisha B'Av through the learning of Torah of an avel. An avel cannot learn a thing, nothing, and Tisha B'Av, we are allowed. We are permitted. Why? Why is there a chiluk? If, like I said before, Hilchot Avilut of Tisha B'Av stem from an avel. So here, I think it's only right that we explain a very fundamental idea which Rav Soloveitchik developed. I heard Rav Kelman mention this morning. It's a very well-known idea. It has been published so many different places in articles and books. I heard it many years ago from my father, and as I said, I would like to share my father's Torah with you today. Rav Soloveitchik quoted a Gemara in Masechet Yevamot that talks about Avilut Yishana and Avilut Chadasha. The Gemara distinguishes between mourning that is old and that is chadasha, that is new. When someone loses a family member, a parent, that's called avilut chadasha. It happens right now. Tragedy strikes and kick in laws of avilut. Onain, avel, we'll talk about it in a second. Avilut Yeshana, the Gemara says, is when we mourn events that happened in the past, like Tisha B'Av. And Rabbi Soloveitchik explained that even though there is a lot in common, more than you think even, between Avilut Yeshana and Avilut Chadasha, there is one major difference. They both are the opposite. They work in the opposite way. Both with the same target. And I'll explain. Hilchot Avilut are built to help us deal with the pain that we are in. Lo aleinu, someone dies, the reaction is life is over. It's all over. How can we continue? How can anyone go anywhere from here? The helem, the shock is so great. The Chot Avilut tell us that at that point a person is an onein. At that point, you are exempt from mitzvot. Why? Because I can't keep mitzvot right now. Life is over. But we all know that after the kvura, after the burial, start the shiva. And the shiva are there, the laws of mourning of shiva are there to make us realize the onein is over, it's time to sit, to realize, to get over the shock, but we're not leaving the house. We are on the floor. We are in deep mourning. And then when we finish the shiva, we go to the next step, shloshim. Shloshim allows us to leave the house, but certain laws are still there. We're still restricted in the way we interact with the world that we live in. But the rationale of this move from Onein to Shiva to Shloshim is to help us adapt to the world outside of us, slowly, slowly taking us out of our tragic area that we're in right now, and telling us slowly, slowly, gradually, let's enter life again. Life does go on again. We can't go in from one day to tomorrow. You know, well, there was a terrible Shiva where I live in Alon Shvut. A young soldier was killed. He was an officer. Actually, a family from Toronto. I'm sure you're all... Daniel Mandel, who's from... His mother was from Toronto years ago. And they sat Shiva Erev Pesach for a few hours. They got up. Mamash Erev Pesach. They sat in the morning. And they sat 5 hours, and then it was Pesach, and it was all over. We all know that people that have a short Shiva find it very hard, because Shiva is really a time where we can gather our thoughts, we can deal with the pain, but we know that we have to get back to life. But it takes time. Shiva, Shloshim, and then a year. The restrictions are lessened as we go by, but they're still there until we finish the year. With Avilut Yeshana, it's exactly the same, but the opposite. Why? Very simple. With Avilut Yeshana, how many of us really feel the loss of Beit HaMikdash? Do we really feel on our daily lives that there's no temple out there? Baruch Hashem, we live big gadol, in the bigger picture. Things are not so bad for the Jewish people today. Do we really feel that we're missing something? Avilut Yeshana, the laws of Avilut here come to teach us what it means not to have a Mikdash. But here we have to do it the opposite. The 3 weeks are similar to the Yud Bet Chodesh, 12 months. The 9 days are parallel to the Shloshim. And Tisha B'Av is like the Shiva. Slowly, slowly we take ourselves in. We restrict ourselves more and more. We add more restrictions until we get Tisha B'Av. And just like the person sitting Shiva, so do we. And we slowly educate ourselves with what it means not to have a Mikdash. That's Avilut Yeshana. My father mentioned once, based upon this idea, a story that can explain this idea very much, to show how Avilut works with us where we are, how it takes us, how it works with us. He said that years ago, Rav Shneur Kotler, Rav Aaron Kotler's son, lost a son. And Rabbi Soloveitchik showed up at the Shiva, and at the Shiva, there were two other rabbis that were sitting there, with Rav Huttner and Rabbi Teitz from New Jersey. And they sat there at the Shiva. And of course, you can imagine a Shiva for a son. And they asked a question. The question was, why is it that for a parent, we have this concept of Yud Bet Chodesh, of 12 months, but for a son, we only have Shloshim? What is the real model of Avilut? Shloshim or Yud Bet Chodesh? Which is the exception? Which is the rule? And why a difference? And my father told us, I heard the story, I think I heard the story over 35 years ago. He explained that each rabbi that gave an answer, this I'm not going to do right now, but he explained that how each rabbi that gave the answer that has to do with his personality. One rabbi mentioned that really you should sit Shiva and Avilut up to 30 days. But for a parent, we add 12 months. Why is that? Because with the loss of a parent, something else has been lost. Their tradition. The Masoret. We mourn not only the loss of our parents, but the loss of some kind of link in the chain that connects us to our past. I spoke this morning about that when we mourn in the kinot about Holocaust Jewry, the people that were killed in the Holocaust, we also mourn about the Torah that was forgotten, the tradition that was almost disconnected. Generations were wiped out that really somehow could have disconnected us from our past. Every time parents die, something also dies with our connection to the past. And that's what we mourn in 12 months. Another rabbi argued very similar. He said, it is true that usually it should be shloshim. But why 12 months for a parent? Because of kibud avim. Kibud avim demands from us to do more than the regular. Normal avelut is shloshim yom. But for a parent, we add. Because of kibud avim, to show that something is special and different. But I would like to focus on the third answer, which I think really goes back to what we just said now. The third answer, and I think that was Rav Soloveitchik's answer. He explained that the idea of avilut is always to deal with the situation that you're in right now. Darko shel olam, it is the way of the world that parents should die before their children. And when parents, Be'ezrat Hashem, hopefully die at an age where they should be passing away, an old age, then sometimes people don't feel the pain so much of the loss, and that might mean that the children will mourn in a way that is not appropriate. That's the teva. That's the nature of the world. So here comes the rabbis, here comes our halakha and tells us, no, you must take the laws of mourning seriously. But lo aleinu, when a parent loses a child, is that person ever going to really be able to come back fully to life? The pain will be there forever. Do I need to tell him 12 months? I can tell him 12 years. So here the halakha tells you shloshim yom. Because halakha tells you, I want you to realize that with all the pain that you're going to have, you have to get back to life. And that's why for a child, there's only shloshim. Similarly, as I explained, avilut yeshana is built to help us learn, to deal, to understand the loss of the Beit HaMikdash. Now, by the way, this idea of Rav Soloveitchik is not only a philosophical one. It has halachic implications, which always in the yeshiva world created arguments between yeshiva boys. Rav Soloveitchik always explained, based upon this, that we don't make up halachot. We have models of halachot with avilut. For example, the discussion of shaving in the 3 weeks, in the 9 days. If Rav Soloveitchik is correct, and the 12 months is parallel to the 3 weeks, then the same way we shave in the 12 months, so could we shave in the 3 weeks. And the same goes with all the halakhot that have to do with haircuts and going to weddings, because you know many times, every year people get confused. They say, "What's? Are you allowed to listen to music? Are you allowed to shower?" It's very confusing. The same goes with the days between Pesach and Shavuot, Sfirat HaOmer. People get confused. There also, Rav Soloveitchik explained that the model there is also 12 months for a parent. So once you know what the model is, you know what's allowed and what's not allowed. Avilut Chadasha and Avilut Yeshana. Let's go back now to my question. I asked a question. I asked if the laws of Tisha B'Av, the Avilut Tisha B'Av, stem from Hilchot Avilut. So why are we not allowed to learn anything when we're in Avel for a parent, and we're allowed to learn today, Yirmiyahu, Eicha, Kinot, speak about the Churban? The answer is very simple. Because when the rabbis told us that we're allowed to learn Tisha B'Av certain parts of Torah, it wasn't parts of Torah in which we fulfill the mitzvah of learning Torah per se. They were passages of Torah that will bring us into the mourning, that will teach us, that will explain to us what we are mourning. It is part of the avilut itself to learn Yirmiyahu, to learn Eicha, because it's avilut yeshana. because we do not know much about the Avilut. So therefore we have to learn our history. We have to read Kinot. We have to learn our past. We have to read in Yirmiyahu and Eicha and understand what went on there. The passages of Torah that we are allowed to learn today are because the special, unique Avilut, which is today, which is Avilut Yeshana. An Avel, lo aleinu, that's his Shiva for a family member, doesn't need anyone to explain to him why he's so sad, why he's so upset, what his loss is. He doesn't need any portions of Torah to add to his anger and to add to his sorrow. He doesn't need to read Eicha to feel more sad. It's natural. That's Avilut Chadasha. It comes with that saying. Avilut Yishana, though, demands from us to learn, to read, to do kinot. And that's why it could very well be that the idea of learning Torah today is not just the parts of Torah that we're allowed to learn, it's not just a heter. It's not just okay, but rather it could very well be that really what we really should be doing today is reading Yirmiyahu, is reading Eicha. We should really be dwelling into these discussions because that's the essence of the day. That's mitzvat hayom. The avilut itself is what we're supposed to be doing today. And that stems from the law of avilut. If we already speak about chot avilut, let's go back to other chot avilut that don't exist today and ask, why don't they? There is a halakha. We all, people that sat Shiva, all know this halakha, that on the seventh day, we get up in the morning. Miktzat hayom kechulo. The rule is that the beginning of the day is considered the whole day. And that's why the minhag till today in Shiva houses is after shacharit in the morning, the people who sit Shiva, they get up from their seats and they end the Shiva, which is a very strange halachic concept. I mean, I don't think we don't use it very often. Can you imagine if Shabbat if we would use it, or Yom Tov we would use it? We don't use it. Why do we use it for an Avel is a good question. So the question, of course, is if today is a Yom of Avilut, and it all stems from Hilchot Avilut, so why don't we apply that law today? We should have today davened, and then 5 minutes later, got up. Miktzat hayom kechulo. Or at least, we should change the customs that we have today. The answer is very simple. The answer is, because according to the Medrash, the Beit HaMikdash was burning in the afternoon. After Chatzot Hayom. So it would be very strange if at the time that the temple was burning, that would be the time that we're going to start showering and going back to life as if. And therefore, we continue the Minagei Avilut till tomorrow. But if that's true, then our custom doesn't make sense at all. Because at Chatzot Hayom, we actually start going back into life. We start sitting on chairs. We start doing other customs. There are different customs people have, customs to bake in the afternoon. There are certain customs that people have that also have to do with this idea of, okay, you have Avilut, but it's time to come back to life. So why is that true? If historically now is the time of the great Churban. So here I mentioned what Rabbi Kelman mentioned this morning, and the speaker before me mentioned a very, very well-known and famous idea, which I would like to focus on. That even though the Beit Mikdash was burning at this point, that itself created some kind of nechama, as was mentioned before, with the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not destroy his people, and alternatively, he destroyed the Mikdash. And that is why, after Chatzot, one is allowed to speak about nechama. I want to explain that idea a little bit. Already in Miglat Eicha, we find nechama. We find psukim that talk about nechama. In the Haftarah that we read, there are psukim of nechama. If today is the day of Avilut, then the nechama is also part of the day, because There is no avilut without nechama. Every time we have avilut, nechama is part of it. Nichum avelim is an essential part of the Shiva itself, of comforting our family, our friends, when they mourn. Today is a day where we are all in mourning. So therefore, we must all comfort ourselves. The nechama that we start in the afternoon, I would like to argue, is entwined with the avilut. It's part of the avilut. There is no such thing as nechama separate from avilut. It goes together. But it's more than that. It's that the avilut, as we just proved, the avilut itself can prove the nechama. We are looking, we look for nechama even in tragedies. When we look at the Beit HaMikdash burning, we say, it could have been worse. It's the building, not the people. I mentioned this morning the famous story of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva walking and seeing the fox come out of Kodesh HaKodashim, and everyone crying, and Rabbi Akiva laughing. Very famous midrash that basically says the same idea. That you can look into the depth of the Khurban, in the depth of tragedy, and one must look and take from there also nechama as much as one can. From the depth sometimes of tragedies, in some funny, ironic, absurd way, we can find sometimes nechama. I heard once a story that's printed about Shimon Wiesenthal, the famous Nazi hunter, who, when he survived the war, when he survived the Shoah, apparently a chaplain arrived at his camp, and offered them to pray with them in the morning. And he noticed that Shimon Wiesenthal did not show up for the prayers in the morning. And he approached him in the morning and I said, "Where were you? Why don't you come join us?" And he said, "Rabbi, I'm very sorry, I can't pray anymore." "Why not?" He said, "Well, there was someone in my bunk in the camp who was able to smuggle a sitter into the camp." The Germans didn't notice it. And this sitter was used by this fellow as a source of buying bread from others. He would rent out the sitter to others and receive pieces of crust of bread in which he ate to survive. And Shimon Wiesenthal said, "I can't daven after seeing that a person used a sitter to save his life and put others in danger." And the rabbi turned to him and said, "You're right, it's very difficult. It's a terrible thing and I don't know how to judge that. But instead of focusing on that man and what he did, why don't you focus on all those Jews that were willing to give up their bread to daven? Surely, that should give you strength to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It all depends of what you focus on, what you see." Rabbi Akiva and his friends are looking at the same Churban, and they're both sad for the Churban. They're both in mourning. But Rabbi Akiva teaches us that one must look into the Avilut and see the Nechama. And that, I think, is also part of the uniqueness of the Avilut of Tisha B'Av. That it demands from us, the same way we demand from ourselves, to give comfort to the people around us when they're sitting Shiva, we must also give comfort to ourselves and to the Jewish people on this day of Tisha B'Av, when we mourn. The Rambam tells us, I actually have the Rambam here in front of me, that when a person sits down before Tisha B'Av, he's supposed to sit down on the floor and eat certain types of food that have to do with Avilut. And he says, "Zoi midat kol am שאינם יכולים לסבול יותר מדי. אבל החסידים הראשונים, כך הייתה מידתן. The great people would ערב תשעה באב, היו מביאים לאדם פת חריבה במלח ושורה במים ויושב בתנור ואוכלה ושותה. And then he says, he sits on the floor, he eats his food. בדאגה, with worry, with concern, בשממה, totally bewildered, ובחייה, and cries, כמי שמתו מוטל לפניו. Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that that Rambam seems to contradict another Rambam. The Rambam tells us in Hilchot Avel, אל יתקשה אדם יותר, על מתו יותר מדי, שנאמר, אל תיקחו למת. כלומר, יתר מדי, שזהו מנהגו של העולם. A person should not cry too much when he has a loss. המצער עצמו על מנהגו של העולם, when things go normal, when a parent dies at a good age, and it's normal way of life, whoever cries too much, הרי זה טיפש. So Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, why when it comes to Tisha B'Av, do we encourage you to cry? And when it comes to a shiva of a parent, we don't. The answer is very simple based upon what we just said now. For a parent, it's minhago shel olam, slowly, gradually, a person should be able to go back to life. When it comes to Tisha B'Av, we try to encourage us to realize the loss. But I will end with some divrei nechama. I just mentioned a second ago that the uniqueness of today's, the avilut of today, stems from hilchot avilut, that we mourn that we, our parents or our family members, but they are built and structured based upon the unique type of avilut that we have as a people, that we're crying over the loss of the Beit HaMikdash and all the other tragedies in Jewish history. But as I said before, it is our responsibility to find nechama from the terrible events around us. The same way the Gemara finds nechama in the fact that the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, not the people, so must we today, towards the end of Tisha B'Av, look around us and look at Medinat Yisrael as a source of nechama. Uvirushalayim tinuchamu, we say, the Navi says. Yerushalayim should be our source of nechama. I don't know, each one has a different minhag, what they do today in Menachem. Some people have a different Nachem, some people add words, take away words. I took away some words when I said Nachem today. I didn't say in my Nachem today that Yerushalayim is totally desolate, because that would be a lie. Yerushalayim is not totally desolate. Yes, we have problems, and as we saw the past few days, the question of who really owns Har HaBayit and the Six-Day War going back is a big question. That's a very big question. It's not very clear. But let's look at the bigger picture. Yerushalayim has women, men, children, old people sitting in the streets of Yerushalayim. We have a nechama when we look at Yerushalayim. Yes, it's not complete. Yes, Tisha B'Av will still go on. But Yerushalayim should be our source of nechama. Am Yisrael, our strong Jewish people all around the world, especially in Eretz Yisrael, which are our proud people and are continuing the heritage and tradition of our forefathers, surely should be a source of nechama to all of us. Thank you.